You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 20th of December 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got some very good news to begin the show with today, and it concerns the ex-police officer, Harry Miller, who has been taking the police to court, basically, and taking the government to court, appealing against what are known as hate crime incidents. And the appeal was heard this morning, and he's won his appeal. So I'll get into a bit of background on this first. The Court of Appeal is due to rule on a challenge to police guidance over hate incidents after a former officer claimed it unlawfully interferes with the right to freedom of expression. Now, hate incidents are different to hate crimes. If somebody has a perception that somebody else is being hostile to groups with protected characteristics in their speech, they can then report that person to the police. And the police guidance is that if somebody feels as if somebody else was being hostile, they then have to record it. There doesn't have to be any evidence for this. The person that decides that somebody is being hostile, it can claim to be both the aggrieved party and the judge of whether it was hostility or not, and the jury to decide that the person is guilty. So the witness is both judge, jury, and executioner, in effect. And the police record these hate incidents. So you could be saying something completely innocent, and somebody else could decide that they want to get you into trouble, and they could report something that you said, something quite innocent, and say that they feel that this came from a position of hate against a minority, and that would be recorded, and that would go on your record, and when you're applying for a job, that would appear there, and you would not get the job. And this Harry Miller, he was a victim of this. Ex-police officer Harry Miller, who describes himself as gender critical, was visited at work by an officer from Humberside Police in January 2019 over allegedly transphobic tweets. An anonymous member of the public complained about Mr. Miller's tweets, leading Humberside Police to record the complaint as a hate incident. And they actually turned up at his house and said that they needed to check his thinking. And this really does revolve around what is offensive and what is hostile. And Harry Miller has been interviewed by the BBC, and he's saying that it is essential that as a part of democracy and as a part of free speech, that we can be offensive. And it does not make it a crime if somebody is offended at something that you say. You have to be targeting an individual for violence or showing direct hostility towards one of these groups. Just merely being offensive is not a hate incident. A hate incident is any non-crime incident which is perceived by the victim or any other person to be motivated by a hostility or prejudice, according to the College of Policing's guidance on hate crimes. So it's based on what the so-called victim perceives it as. There doesn't have to be any evidence for this. Somebody could just make it up, basically, and it would still get recorded. So he won in the first instance, and now he's taken this appeal up higher because he only won. He didn't win the second instance. They said, well, this police guide, although it shouldn't apply to you in your case, the police guidance still stands the same. So what the upshot of it today is that the police guidance is going to have to change on this. Mr. Miller from Lincolnshire challenged Humberside Police's actions and the College of Policing's guidance at the High Court. Last year, the High Court ruled that Humberside Police's actions were a disproportionate interference with Mr. Miller's right to freedom of expression. So he won in the first instance, but Mr. Miller's challenge to the College of Policing's guidance was dismissed, with the High Court finding that it serves legitimate purposes and is not disproportionate. And that's the part that he took to the appeal court. In March, Mr. Miller's lawyers told the Court of Appeal that the guidance unlawfully violates the right to freedom of expression. And I think a part of this is this word offence in the first place. You can only take offence. Somebody has to take offence. It's by their own volition, and you can choose not to take offence. I mean, when a comedian is coming out with some edgy jokes or whatever, you realise that it's humour and you don't take offence at it. Whereas the same subject matter, you could be offended by if somebody was bringing it up at the dinner table or they were bringing it up in front of children, and you choose to take offence. Basically, it's not that people are giving offence. And we always used to be taught that we should not take offence at things. We should, if people have different opinions to ours, then we should be tolerant of them. But we now have this entire grievance industry where we have different values that are apportioned to different minorities. We have a scale of who is the biggest victim, and they get the most rewards for being that victim. We have a legal system that is now, basically, we have a two-tier society. If you're not a member of a group with protected characteristics, then a crime against you is not going to be treated with the same severity as if it was a crime against one of these groups with protected characteristics. Whereas a crime is a crime. It shouldn't matter what race you are. And if effectively, it takes us right back to Anglo-Saxon times when we had Wergild. And depending on what your position in society was, that depended on how big a fine somebody was fined for killing somebody or for harming somebody or for just for stealing from them. So if you were higher up in society, the fine you had to pay was higher. And nowadays, with this victim hierarchy that we have, if somebody carries out a crime against somebody and they're a member of a minority, then they could get two or three times the prison sentence than it was for somebody who was not a minority. And of course, committing crimes, everybody should be punished for crimes, but the punishment should be equal. It shouldn't be that you are punished more for crimes against members of society, because we're all supposed to be equal under the law. So it shouldn't matter. And then leading on from that, we now have these hate speech laws, which basically means that we have groups in society that we are not allowed to criticize. It's gone from not allowed to incite violence against people or these groups, which is quite right. You should not be allowed to incite violence against anyone. But that's been interpreted as not allowed to criticize these groups, not allowed to point out the statistics that are associated with these groups. Perhaps there may be statistics that show a higher propensity for crime, or perhaps there may be statistics to show a higher than their proportion of the population percentage of them in the media or in government or in banking. And just bringing up these statistics and these facts and observing the patterns that we see in society, you can get accused of hate speech. And then hate speech gets conflated with hate crime, and crime could actually involve violence, and then people's speech itself gets conflated with violence, and we get Black Lives Matter saying things like silence is violence, where not even saying anything at all gets equated now with violence. If you're not speaking up for these other groups in society and you're standing up for your own group, then therefore you are being violent against them. You are not taking an active anti-racist stand. And of course, we as nationalists, we say the best way to do away with all racism is simply to segregate the races. And then this idea, this racism and discrimination, it just could not exist. So I had high hopes for this. I had hoped that the Court of Appeal was going to find in Harry Miller's favour, and they have done. It's been difficult for me to find more details on this. As I say, I've just seen a brief interview with him. And it seems as if the judges involved in this, Dame Victoria Sharp, Lord Justice Haddon Cave, and Lady Justice Simler, have said that it is not illegal to offend people. And in actual fact, it is an essential part of freedom of speech that we have that. The court itself heard that the guidance had been fully replaced, the original guidance on this, with updates including a strong warning against police taking a disproportionate response to reports of a non-crime hate incident, with direct reference to the High Court's ruling. And of course, I mean, all of these so-called speech crimes are disproportionate responses, because you've got somebody that's just saying something which is just words, and it's being treated as if it's serious violence, up to and including murder. I mean, there are people that are in prison simply for putting stickers up that have been accused of terrorism, just for putting stickers up, and not stickers with the intimations of violence, stickers saying simple things like white zone on them. And there are people that are in prison and they've been accused of terrorism for doing this. We now even have people that are COVID skeptics that are being accused of being extremists simply because they disagree with the government's reporting on COVID-19. It's incredible how just people's language is now being conflated with violence and extremism and terrorism, and whole portions of society are being silenced and are unable to talk about the problems that they see that are occurring within society, and they're unable to come out with the solutions, the sort of solutions that we come out with as nationalists. We get accused of being white supremacists for pointing these out, but the solutions that we come up with are solutions that would be of benefit to everyone. Of course it's going to be a benefit to people to be living among their own people. It's obviously the best situation to be in, that is most conducive to well-being. It's the same as it's most conducive for a child to be brought up within his own family, his or her own family, unless that family is dysfunctional, of course. And you can't say that races or ethnicities are dysfunctional. I mean, they may be different. They may be differing life outcomes that come with these different races, but that's the way that they are supposed to be. It's like when you look at average IQ, and if you look at the IQ ratings, 100 is average, that's supposed to be basic, and then when you get down to 70, that used to be regarded as retarded. And if you have somebody that is of one of the races that has an average IQ of 100, a member of that race with an IQ of 70 will be retarded, because that is not normal for that race. But then when you look at the races that do have an average IQ of 70, they're certainly not retarded, because they're supposed to be that IQ. And what I mean by that is, with somebody of a race that has an average IQ of 100 and you have a member of that race with an IQ of 70, they're not going to be able to have proper social interactions with people. They're not going to be able to look after themselves or care for themselves properly. They will be retarded. But when you get a member of one of these races that does have an average IQ of 70, they're perfectly capable of being sociable. They're perfectly capable of looking after themselves, because that's how they are supposed to be. It's only when you start telling everybody that they're all equal, that you get this resentment that builds up because you think, well, some of us are more equal than others, aren't they? But once you understand that all the races, all the ethnicities are different, they don't just look different, they actually are different, then all of that resentment goes. And all of that judging people by your own standards that aren't actually a part of your people group, all of that goes as well. The resentment goes, the dislike of people for having a higher crime rate, say, or for having more of them involved in the media, all of that just disappears because you understand that the different races are different and that they are all competing together because we only have limited territories, limited resources. They compete together, or they used to compete together at the national level. But now what we have in multicultural countries is we have this competition going on within countries, which pulls countries in all different directions. And if we look back through history, it's been the reason why civil wars have started. They've started because you have all these different ethnic groups within one territory. Just look at what happened at the Balkans and in Yugoslavia. You don't really have to go far back in history to see that happening. The way to solve all of these problems isn't to prevent people from talking about it and to create special elite groups in society that cannot be criticized. The way to solve these problems is to have freedom of speech and to have healthy, vigorous debate amongst people that are not going to say, oh, I'm offended at that, you can't possibly say that, and start coming out with ad hominems in order to shut down what the other side is saying. I mean, far too often these ad hominems are just used as an excuse because the other side is losing the debate. It's really the most ungraceful way to admit that you're losing an argument to start calling the other side nasty names. That is effectively what goes on when nationalists or people on the right wing, when they get accused of being a racist or Nazi or white supremacist, it's basically the other side admitting that they've lost the argument. Otherwise, they would be civil and they would be pointing out the other side of the argument. But they don't. They just resort to name calling. Anyway, great news there from the Court of Appeal. Very thankful to Dame Victoria Sharp, Lord Justice Haddon Cave, and Lady Justice Similar for that. And I guess we'll get the details of exactly what was said later on today. I do have another news story that I would like to get into here concerning Oxford University. Oxford University's Race Equality Task Force has reportedly published recommendations that could see academics judged and hired based on what has been described by one professor as a woke score. So rather than being judged on their merit, on the papers that they have produced, they're now going to be judged on how much they virtue signal. And of course, if one of these academics has a hate incident against them for perhaps being critical of the behavior of one or more groups in society, then they're not going to get the job. I mean, it goes worse than that. I mean, just observing patterns. There are patterns that we observe, patterns of behavior that we observe that are associated with groups within society. And just observing those patterns can get you into trouble. And that's what academics are supposed to do, is to observe patterns and make predictions and help us to move towards a better society. And yet we're not doing that now. We're telling these academics you shouldn't be doing that because that's not politically correct. It's more important that you just virtue signal and ignore these patterns and pretend that they aren't there. The proposals are aimed at raising the number of hires from ethnic minority backgrounds, according to The Telegraph, which reviewed the task force's consultation document. The equality panel noted that it was important to embed EDI, which means equality, diversity and inclusion, into all recruitment. So what they're doing here is not just based on virtue signalling, but based on what their diversity score is, whether they're homosexual or not, whether they're transgender, whether they're black, whether they're female. These sort of things are going to count for more than the work that somebody has done and getting the job on merit. And this is why our standards are continually lowering, because we don't have people put into top positions anymore on merit. We have them put into their positions because of a diversity quota. It says here, a centrally funded pool of trained EDI observers should be set up to provide support to recruitment panels on request. So they're basically saying we also have to have these observers there to make certain that people are employing people for their diversity points rather than for their merit. The task force also called for a good citizenship and or commitment to EDI work to be essential criteria towards reward and recognition processes. So you have to virtue signal, basically. You have to argue for these other groups that you may not be a part of. You have to put them first rather than putting your own group first. And then you will get the job. And of course, you should be putting other people first. But when it comes to putting these other groups first instead of your own group, that means nobody is going to be putting your group first, doesn't it? Surely everybody should be putting their own people group first, rather than saying, oh no, you should be putting these other people groups first. And anybody that says that you should be putting your people group first is a supremacist and a racist and a Nazi. It just doesn't make any sense. It's like telling the father of a household that he should be going out to work and giving all the proceeds that he gets from that work to the household next door. And if he doesn't do that, then he's horrible and mean and racist. I mean, it just doesn't make sense, because if the father of the household doesn't do the best that he can for his own household, nobody else is going to do that for them. So these academics, if they're not actually doing what's best for their people, then who else is going to be doing that for them? According to the Telegraph, students and staff have been asked to submit responses to the consultation by next Wednesday. Following this, the task force will create a strategy on equality and diversity that will be submitted to Oxford's Governing Council for approval before it becomes official policy. So every university now has to have a proclaimed strategy on how they intend to best replace the white people that are in that university and the males. That's what diversity is, basically. It just means replacing all the white people. However, the paper reported that the proposals have drawn flak from senior academics at the university, who worry that qualified candidates will be marked down because they haven't jumped on the woke bandwagon. If we are supposed to pay attention to their EDI, their woke score, does this mean it doesn't matter if they are useless at teaching and research? Or do you now have to get a minimum woke score to get a job? An unnamed senior professor told the Telegraph. And of course, it doesn't just apply to these academics, does it? It applies to the students now as well. They don't actually have to learn how to speak English. They don't need to learn how to actually write in English in order to get a place on these courses, because that discriminates against people that are new to the country. So it's not just that it's these academics that don't actually have to know how to do the job anymore. They'll just be given a job based on how much love they profess for one of these other groups. It's the students as well. They don't need to have to learn how to read or write. You don't even have to learn how to read music anymore to do a music degree. The academic said one of the recommended ways to tease out a candidate's views on diversity was to ask them for examples of how they had called out these kinds of issues in their previous appointment. So they're looking for people that have thrown their colleagues under the bus and claimed they were racist. And if you do that, then you might get a job improvement. You might get a raise if you do that sort of thing. So it says here, so you are being interviewed for a job in alchemy, yet you have to go out of your way to show you have tried to virtue signal. To an old codger like me, this just seems crazy. And it doesn't just seem crazy to old codgers. I think it seems crazy to everyone that isn't a part of this social justice warrior craze. An Oxford University spokesman said the document was not yet official policy, noting that a detailed strategy on the recommendations could come by the end of the academic year. Well, it may not be official policy yet, but it's going on throughout us in society, isn't it? All these adverts that we see saying white people don't need to apply, the BBC getting rid of white script writers and saying that they want to improve diversity, they want to have 20% non-whites by whatever year it is. And you only have to look at the adverts on television to see that 50% of the people in these adverts now are black, yet black people only make up 3% of the population. So what is going on here where all these white people are being replaced? It's an unofficial policy, certainly. Already we can see that. Other suggestions include a cross-faculty program of inclusive teaching, curriculum diversification, and decolonizing activities. And what they mean by that is not having white authors in the English class, not having white composers in the music class. And of course, the only way to do that is to just not actually study literature from further back than 1900. And of course, if you do study literature further back from 1900, then you're going to come across politically incorrect wording, and these students are of course going to get triggered by that, and whatever teacher it is that was trying to teach them this is going to lose their job. Curriculum diversification, well, that I guess that means teaching African art or African drumming instead of orchestral music or fine art. Well, we see what's going on in the art world now anyway, don't we, with modern art. Everything is just being dragged down to the lowest common denominator. Finally, it says we need to be training students and academics to better understand microaggressions and stereotypes. And what are microaggressions? Well, when they've basically got everybody so confused and self-censoring that they can't even refer to a man or a woman anymore, then they've got to look for other things that aren't really there. And when you get people that are virtue signaling and are striving very, very hard to be anti-racist, it means that you can pick on them. You can find something in what they've said. So they want to train people to look out for these things. Look out for these microaggressions that people are completely unaware of, and then go after them for that, to make people feel even more uneasy. And better understand stereotypes. Well, we wouldn't have stereotypes if they didn't actually exist, would they? They do have a basis in reality. That's why we have stereotypes. Are they really such a bad thing? Again, it comes down to observing patterns in society and using those patterns to predict behavior. And that is an essential part of our instincts, because it's part of us, our survival instinct. We need to observe patterns in the world around us so that we can avoid hazards. But university isn't about learning to avoid hazards. University is supposed to be about learning everything that there is to learn about the world and specializing in a particular subject, and you want to be taught by the best tutors in this, and that is not the way that the universities are going now. What is more important in university now is learning how to virtue signal and learning how to point out microaggressions. We truly are living in the twilight years of our civilization, I think. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.